I was thinking about Yvonne Chouinard and Doug Tompkins' like trip to Patagonia.
Somehow you feel like almost a bit dirty as human to be here.
I don't know. I'm getting wiser, older.
Hi, welcome to the Vertical Podcast. Edelried decided to start this podcast to share the pleasure and freedom of moving vertically. You will discover how climbing has shaped people's lives and what they envision for the future of the sport and the places where it unfolds. Our hosts, Joe and Lena, two environmental activists, are ready to dive deep with each guest, uncovering their stories, dreams, and the impact they hope to make. Joe and Lena will take you on a journey beyond the climb, revealing what truly drives those who reach for their limits.
In this episode, we're going to explore a few key stops along Seb's journey, where he is now, how we got here, and where he's heading to next. We're going to talk about le voyage, what it means to have contradictions, all of this and more, so grab a seat, settle in, and join us.
Every time I say it. But anyway, so welcome everyone who's listening to us today to the Vertical Podcast. I'm here with Seb, who is now going to introduce himself and tell a little bit about what he's up to and what you're liking doing so far. And yeah, we're going to talk about climbing route, we're going to talk about your fantastic style, and we're probably going to talk a little bit about your future projects as well, and how come they are what they are, and what do they mean, and where it'll bring you to later on. So yeah, would you mind introducing yourself and telling us what you mean, or what does expanding your limits mean to you?
Well, thank you for welcoming me here. My name is Seb Bert. I'm from Belgium. I'm 30 now, and I've been climbing for 20 years, a bit more. So it's been a while. It's been a big part of my life, and it still is, obviously. So I grew up in Belgium in a regular small village. Went to school. My father built his own climbing gym.
At home?
Yeah, close to home. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's quite one of the biggest climbing gym in Belgium. So it's quite nice. Yeah. I mean, I literally grew up in this climbing gym. I spent all my time after school there, and so that's.
Does it have a name, this climbing gym?
Yeah, it's called L'Escale.
Okay.
From L'Escalade. And l'escale in French means that when you stop somewhere during a journey or something. When you're traveling by boat, for example, and you stop in an island, means it is an escale.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the.
So normally people would associate this to maybe planes and having like layovers or whatever, but I love that you said when you're traveling by boat, obviously you need to stop off. And
no, but I think the word is more used with the boat traveling.
Huh?
Yeah.
Come on, I was going for a thing. I was setting something up for later on.
Yeah. And then what else should I say? I did a master degree in sports science in Belgium at university. And then I worked a bit with this in climbing gyms. I did like training plans for people. I worked for a year at the Belgian Federation as a climbing coach, like the national climbing youth climbing team. So I went in competitions and stuff, took a lot of planes, if we can relate it to what we're gonna discuss later, I believe. And then at some point I had the opportunity to live partly from climbing. So I got a contract with Patagonia and then decided to leave my job and try to go full on with the climbing. And that's where I'm at now. It's been 3 years that I'm only doing climbing.
So relatively recently.
Quite recent, yeah. Quite recent. I definitely like all kind of climbing, different style, and if I do only one discipline, at some point I get bored or something. So what I like with climbing is to switch mode from the bouldering, from sport climbing into
So you're like switching it out.
And I kind of
mixing.
Yeah, I think otherwise I could not keep going with climbing. So I did some competition before. I think I did like 12 years competing in the Belgian national team in the youth categories, and then I did like two or three years at the, in the World Cups, senior World Cup, adult World Cups, and then yeah, moved to the outdoor. Yeah.
Nice. So a nice you have a nice potpourri of experiences and
yeah
and styles of climbing. But and what is it? What do you think about when you think about expanding your limits?
Yeah, expanding limits. Well, when I first think about expanding limit, I would say like in general, it's something that you achieve that no one has ever achieved before. That would be the definition I would give if I.
Okay, so the textbook definition of it.
But I would maybe answer in a more personal way.
I would love you to do that.
Yeah, of course. I would say I'm expanding limit when I surprise myself in something that I do,
okay.
which can be in the climbing or as a human, or when I do something that I didn't think I could be able to do somehow and get surprised with it. So that's.
And have you been surprised with yourself recently?
Yeah, recently. A lot. Like, I've changed my mind many times in many different situations. With the climbing as well, like, the past years have been quite surprising. Like, I would say I did stuff, like, I complete climbs that I would never thought I could complete. So, yeah.
Do you want to give us an example of a surprise of yours?
I think, I mean, just, hard to think because on the other hand, like, I'm always optimistic before, so.
Actually getting to the surprise is very like, oh, I was optimistic, so it happened, and like, okay.
Yeah, but still, I'm still surprised because, okay. I'm optimistic, so I believe I can. It could happen, but somehow I'm still surprised after that. So that's nice. I have the two sides of it.
You have like a plus situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing about expanding limit could be also, I think, a good parameter would be to. To put things into question, always put things into question.
Oh, I like
always,
that.
Always question what I believe, how I behave, and why, and like.
So by questioning what you believe, you're expanding your limits because you take what you believe and you literally expand it.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay. That's and you don't take something into granted or something.
You don't take it. Yeah, you don't take it for granted. You're always questioning it.
I think it's something that make me grew as it's something that I wasn't doing like 10 years ago or something. I was just.
Why do you think you're doing it now?
I don't know. I'm getting wiser, older. Maybe. Not smarter. That's for sure. That's.
Yeah. I mean, there's different kinds of smart. To be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, so just to circle back a bit towards climbing and maybe the biggest project that you've had this year, or I don't know if you consider it the biggest project you've had this year, or because you have a lot of stuff coming as well. But something that we might want to dive into a little bit is about what you did with Bon Voyage.
Yeah, at least it was one of the main projects indeed.
Do you want to just tell us very briefly what's Bon Voyage, where is it, what brought you to it? And then my actual question is, so that's just to give a bit of context to those who are listening to us, but my actual question is, do you want to tell us those things that no one ever asks you about?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to tell you about the things. Well, Bon Voyage is this route in Hainaut, in South France. It's a trad route opened by James Pearson, British, almost French now, guy, a climber. and it's great. It proposed a grade of 9A E12, which makes it like one of, if not the hardest trad line in the world. And it's this traversing line on really nice sandstone. Really, really beautiful. So yeah, I went there last year, like in 2023, to try Le Voyage, which is the direct line of it. And I just gave a visit on the route of half an hour, and then like I really wanted to come back. So I made it like the main project of spring 24. And yeah, I spent like two trips of about 1 or 2 weeks to make it happen, and yeah, it went. So yeah,
it happened.
It happened. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Was this a surprise?
I was really confident about my abilities to send it, but at the end things didn't turn out that well. On the first trip, I got injured with my pinky finger. It's the other hand, which
no
is
one,
a good sign.
No.
Yeah.
But it means that it's not, you don't still have the injury on it.
No,
if you switch the hand.
I depend. It's quite a weird injury. It's a lumbrical muscle injury, which is a muscle that is between the ring finger and the little finger.
So it's like you're webbing in between.
It's a tissue, like a ligament, muscle in between two tendon. And you don't feel pain at all when you use the four fingers, but you feel pain when you use only one of the two fingers which are involved. Like when I do like two finger pockets, that I can feel it. Or when I take only like a mono with the little finger, which is what happened there. Because one of the holds on Bon Voyage is like a pinky pocket that you need to take only with the pinky, which is kind of an unusual hold.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, everything didn't turn out very well. I had this injury, and then I came back because I was too obsessed with the route and probably a bit too early. I found another beta for this move to make it go.
To not have to use your pinky.
Yeah. And then like I opened my skin on this hold again. And so at some point I was really, and we didn't have much more days. So at some point I really thought I wouldn't make it happen this week. And then you never know with climbing project. If you don't stick the moment, sometimes you just like, you come back the next week, but it's too warm, and then you come back a month later, and then you're not in shape anymore. So you never know. If you don't do it right there, sometimes you just miss the opportunity, and maybe you never
escape.
You never do it sometimes. Yeah. So at the end of the process, I was like really doubting whether I would climb it or not, and I got spread when I climbed it. So then,
when I was asking you before, what's the time you were surprised? I was like, was it Bon Voyage a surprise?
Yeah, I should have said it.
It's okay. I forgive you. I forget. Maybe we can edit it to make it so that Bon Voyage was a surprise.
We're going to edit it.
Okay, perfect.
And then we're going to make me speak smartly as well. If it's fine.
I don't know if Dominic can do that. I mean, I'm sure he'll try his best. He's a magician. He's a magician. Brilliant. Shout out to Dominic and his magician ways in editing for this podcast. Cool. So thank you for giving us a bit of an overview. What's the flip side? What's the dark side of Bon Voyage?
The dark side? What do you mean?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what's the...
So we are in the question where... What people don't hear much.
Yeah,
about.
Right there.
No,
what
if
people never ask you?
Actually,
Bon Voyage,
there are some polemics about Bon Voyage, as every famous route in the world, or so James put it up like a few years ago, I think, and he was really involved in the whole place of Anot and stuff, and I think some locals didn't really like it because he made this wall so famous
that lots of people were going.
That many people from all around the world were coming for Le Voyage, which is his first route on this wall, but just coming only for that. And Anhot is quite a really big place with many climbs, and people would come from Great Britain and any other place in Europe to climb Le Voyage, but not even warming up on the other route. And I've heard this like angry local climber, like, these guys going only on Le Voyage. And he was like, obviously not happy with it. But yeah. And critiquing. And actually, Le Voyage was first bolted like a long time ago.
Okay.
And it had another name. And then it was unbolted by this guy.
The angry one.
And James climbed it, which was amazing. But he kind of changed the name. Because before it was Le Voyage Forme la Jeunesse in French, but written with many, I don't know, it's not even French, it's like a local dialect or something.
Okay, so it was
so
name,
it was
a
super
dialect.
Strange, and James made it become international somehow, like called it Voyage, which is more easier
to understand.
So he made it like a pure amazing route, actually, but the French was kind of
angry. Yeah. Okay,
but he's pissed off about everything, so no worries.
He's a bit of an angry soul.
He is really an angry soul, unfortunately for him. If he listened to us, I don't think
we're sorry that you're an angry soul.
Yeah.
But you live next to some amazing rocks. So.
Yeah, and he has a good time there. So
okay,
that's fine.
That's good. That's the important thing. Maybe he would be even more angry if he didn't even have the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so given that, like, before you, obviously this route was created by James and climbed for the first time by James, in an interview that he was, right after his, maybe after his send, he was talking about, control and letting go of control and how actually by letting go of control, he's now climbing.
He was able to do it.
He was able to climb something that before maybe having all of that control, he wasn't able to climb. And I was just, it was really curious. And I was just wondering how, like, did you approach this with a lot of control, with not a lot of control? Like,
yeah. I think James was really controlled maybe by, like, earlier in his life. And because he is kind of a nerd, like, really into details climber, which is super amazing to see. Like, I've climbed with him recently, and he had some magic trick with the chalk he using.
Okay.
Like, he would mix some different kind of chalk for a project or another, and depending on the conditions, on the humidity in the air, and like he would use this one, and it was amazing.
Sounds a bit like a druid.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch, and it was fun because like, he told me, you should let me see your skin. He looked at this like humidity captor, mm-hmm. and okay, you should use this one for this climb. And I use it, and it worked. Like, I had a good feeling actually. And then for another climb, he told me to use another one. So I was
like, I just imagine him having like a huge, like, I don't know, wall of different kinds of chalks and being like, let's look at the skin, let's look at the barometer.
He had this bag with like 10 different package of chalk, so he was really like into this chalk
potion
thing.
Making.
So I can imagine that he could be really in control with some stuff. Well, what about myself then? I would say I like to be in control as well, but as soon as like talking about Bon Voyage, it's like really about risk as well, because it's a trail line which is a bit runner that at the end, if you fall bad, you could potentially like hit this spike which is under the final arête of Bon Voyage. Like, it's probably 8 meters or 6 meters below this arête, and if you fall there, you could definitely, like, I think if you fall bad, like a bit sideways, you could definitely hit this spike. And during all the process, I wasn't sure whether it's really possible to hit it or not. And And that was something which didn't work for me. Like, I want to be sure what will happen if I fall there and what will happen if I fall at another place. I want to be sure whether I would hit something and then not falling, or like if I can fall without pressure. So I actually put a lot of things in place in the route, on the spike, like with the belayer, to be sure that on this move I wouldn't hit, and on this move I can hit, but then I won't fall. Like, okay. I want to have stuff controlled before the go, and then I can let it go and don't think anymore about it.
Okay, so it's controlling before to be able to live the moment in the way that you need to be able to do the climb.
Yeah, somehow. I believe I need to have the cognitive control on stuff, like kind of a theoretical control, like before, and then I can take the risk or not. If I decide that I go, then I'm not thinking anymore about it. But first, I need to be sure.
Okay, so you need to do your rituals and your assurances to be able to then go and do.
Kind of. So I wouldn't say I'm fully letting go and stuff, not at all. But I think you can't really. You can't let things go totally on this kind of climbing. Yeah. Like when you take risk, you definitely need to have an analysis before, to analyze the thing, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I realize this is maybe a bit of a strange question, but I just thought it was so interesting how James was saying that he was letting letting go of control in this very, like, yeah, where you need to be very precise and you need to know what's going to happen if you do this and what's going to happen if you do that. So
it's funny because James asked me, advised me when I was working on the route, I was hesitating whether I should put two cams or only one cam in one hole, and like thinking that putting another one would be more tired, obviously, and it was the case really. But he really told me, well, I think you should be like, in trad climbs, you should really be confident about what you place, and like, and so I placed two pieces of gear instead of one, where Adam and James only place one. But I don't know, I was, because you never know, like if you take a big fall and it's sideways and
might pop up, yeah.
Even not pop up, but break it somehow, I don't know. But I placed two instead of one, and because, yeah, it was good advice from James, I think, just to be mentally comfortable. Yeah.
In what you place,
in what
how you
place,
you do.
And yeah. And then you can, like, technically and physically make your climbing happen.
Absolutely. And is this method of, like, controlling everything before so that then when you're actually climbing you can let go kind of part of your style? Or do you think it was specific to this route?
I think it's something I do when I do some more run-out climbing or climbing on gears or on big wall where you need to run it out a bit. Yeah, that's something I do. On sport climbs, I don't think about this.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm a lot into details on sport climb as well. But,
okay.
Sorry.
No. What would you say is your style in other kinds of climbing and sport climbing, maybe? Or in bouldering?
Linking to control, or what do you mean?
No, just in general. Like, what would you describe as your style in the way that you approach other kinds of climbing? I'm trying to make a link to talk about style and performance.
Okay,
so I was like, if we talk about style and different kinds of climbing, then we can talk about style over performance, and it's all going to make sense.
Okay, I get it.
But we can just go on to the question itself.
I would say linking to the letting go, I'm kind of... looking into details as well, and perfectionist, I would say. Like, I like to really technically know what I'm doing or find the really best solution. So that's something I do, but it's not linked to the question you were asking.
No. I think it's a valid area to
explore. About style, I would say, like, I like it to... Yeah, to make it a bit original, or... at least not always do the same way, like people all just choose the same route or like try to find something new.
This is probably all because if you just did the same thing as someone else or as everyone else, then you'd probably get bored of climbing, right?
Maybe. That's, I don't know.
Because that's what you were saying at the beginning. Yeah. You're like, I need to do different kinds of climbing because otherwise I'd get bored. So maybe that's also true. Connected as well.
No, I have the feeling that what motivates me is sometimes it's just also the creativity behind like choosing a project or like just thinking, oh, what if I do that? Like if I try to do that, is it something, what will it bring me? And that's something where I can find a fire inside me where I really want to go. Or
would you say that that your project with El Cap and sailing to El Cap was a product of creativity? Or
I would say it was mixed between creativity and being pragmatic because like I didn't
practicality
yeah, probably like it was the only way I could go back to Yosemite somehow because I wanted to stop flying like
so the only way
strongly.
That you could go to Yosemite by the limits that you put yourself
that's
so you're expanding your limits by putting other limits.
So
oh.
We're going into the philosophical.
Yeah, we're now in the philosophical part of it. No, but so this idea of not flying, of not wanting to renounce to things, so wanting to keep doing things even though you're not flying. This is kind of becoming a style for you? Is this becoming a modality?
It is, definitely.
Okay, do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
You mean about the idea of stop playing or
no, about the idea of that as well if we want to, but I'm really interested in how did you get to the point or what steps did you take to get to the point in where you're like, okay, I'm not going to fly anymore, so now I have to reimagine everything to be able to do the things that I want. And what have you learned from this process, and what are you learning, and what do you want to kind of take forward?
I would say it brings me some new opportunities, brings me some new way of like going to climb. So indeed, it's a way of develop creativity as well, like to imagine new possibility around the place. And that's so, for example, we thought about this link up in Fontainebleau where we did this 107 days in a day with a friend, and I don't think I would have like thought about it if I was like climbing in a regular like traveling way, or I don't know. Yeah.
So you spend more time in the places where you are.
Yeah.
And so you develop these.
You develop a new way of thinking and going to the climb. That's quite fun.
And do you think that this new development, let's say, is kind of linking to your concept of performance?
You can definitely like include this new concept into the performance. I think it adds something to the performance, or at least it plays a role in how, yeah.
Because basically climbing 100...
So I would say that style and performance are definitely linked. Because depending on how you do a route, like if you do it without the knee pads, for example, or if you do it barefoot, which is a style of climbing, then it increases the performance, or it changes at least. So I would say the way to go to the crack changes the performance somehow, like to the climb, or the way of linking climb changes the performance. So it's definitely something, two concepts which are linked for me. Maybe not the clothing style, even though sometimes some clothing can be quite hard to climb with.
Well, I mean, if you don't have pink tights, then I don't think you can climb as well.
No, not at all. I'm not flexible anymore.
Yeah, there you go, bombast. Yeah. So I think we've established that's scientific.
Yeah, that's scientific, yeah. I can't fold split anymore.
It's impossible.
Impossible.
Yeah. Impossible. Ah, that's why I can't do a split, because I don't wear pink tights.
No, I'm not that much into pink tights. No, I'm trying to
diversify.
Yeah, diversify.
Okay, what's the type of tight now?
Yeah, it's dresses.
Dresses. No, a lot of space.
I've bouldered with dresses, and that's quite fun.
Okay, nice.
You can like
Please tell me that you did the 107 A's with Drosa.
Some of. Yeah, we swapped like closes. We did probably 20 boulders on the 100 on with Drosa.
So you basically turned it into like a huge endurance sport day.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And how's that?
Was great. Was a great day. Was really fun.
Do you think you'd do it again?
Probably not the same. You know. No, it's you have so many endurance challenge that you can find out how it's there like anywhere. So I would probably do something else. We did something else like a month ago, like just secretly in Verdon.
Okay. Yeah, might talk about that another time then.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
Huh? Yeah, well, go.
No, we did. We wanted to do this link up in Verdon, like where 24 hours would theoretically be like. To complete it in 24 hours would be normally impossible, and we tried to do it. We failed, obviously. So yeah, that was...
It's one for the future, then.
Yeah. The idea was to do 5 hard routes in Verdon in a day, which was quite like 1,500 meters of climbing, like almost 60 pitches, I think, and like everything in the 7th and 8th grade. So that was really intense, and we were kind of dead after that.
I can imagine. Yeah. A nice day. Then all you had to do the next day was 107 A's in font, right? 5.
Yeah.
You can link those up, and then you're completely demolished
in 2 days. Yeah, no.
Okay, in 48 hours. That would be an interesting 48 hours.
Yeah, I think so.
But and this concept of style that you were talking about before, about the way that you approach the crag or the way that you approach climbing, like, do you think that kind of like the thing about feminism that we were talking about before, about inclusive language, do you think that you doing this and you exposing this to your community, or exposing your community to your style that you're developing, will have an impact on the community and maybe, you know, on the downstream effects of, or it will have downstream effects later on?
But it's quite hard to say how much downstream effect it will have, but for sure I know many people who did their own days and challenge because we did it, like, or because I've different people who wrote me messages, for example, about crossing the Atlantic, sailing to go climbing somewhere, or who did their own sailing adventure in Sardinia and stuff because we went for it, or same with the biking stuff in Fond, for example. Like I've different friends who did their own circuit in Fond, and it was their like main project this year, and like.
And how does that feel? People telling you this?
It's super. I'm super proud. Like I'm super happy. Like that people are happy about doing something because we like inspire them. So yeah, that's something I'm really proud about.
And do you think that this kind of, because the awesome thing is that you do something like this, you show your community that it's possible, and other, not maybe just you, but other people as well. And then people start doing this and adopt this modality. And then ultimately it's the idea that it becomes a new kind of norm, right? And that it slowly starts to infiltrate really the way that people are thinking about going on climbing trips and what does climbing performance actually mean, and including the part that has to do everything with getting there. Really in part of the concept of the performance and really like constructing that.
I think that there is something which is born now, not only because of me, but because of different people who are doing their own way, their different way, like biking to crags. And I think there is a new norm rising somehow. Yeah.
I mean,
and people are wearing more and more tights. Like,
That's the real change, isn't it?
Well, even Tommy Caldwell, I've heard.
Really?
But, yeah, but mostly in Burning Man, not so much climbing.
Not so much climbing.
I
mean, it's just a step from Burning Man to climbing wearing tights. It'll probably be a quick switch. But yeah, the rise of the EcoPoint climbing movement and
Definitely.
And it's, also the idea of, I don't know, developing itineraries and projects and all of these things just completely based around this concept really, I think, shows how much power or how much influence or popularity, let's say, this kind of movement is growing. And who knows, maybe, I don't know, in 20 years, it'll be weird to go climbing by plane.
Oh, yeah. For me, it's already that, like, on the people around me, like less and less people go climb by plane, and at least like it's the norm is not to go by plane now. It's been like it's sweet for me. It's from what I see from my point of view, but it's also about being in a niche, probably.
Yeah,
like it's something which has changed, like compared to a few years ago.
And what would you say to anyone who's listening to us now that maybe isn't as aware, isn't as keen to be part of this EcoPoint climbing movement?
Well, like of course the idea is not to culpabilize.
I know the word. Hold on.
Yeah.
Not to
put pressure or like put shame on people who don't travel by plane or like who don't do this like EcoPoint. The thing is, it's all about being aware about the contradiction you have as an individual and just maybe it's hard to say that, like, I don't know, it's a delicate topic because I don't want to blame. Like, you don't want to blame people, or because I have the luck to have a lot of time to climb, and so I can go like by bike somewhere. I can take the time to
sail to the other
side
of the world.
To Yosemite, for example. But like people can't do that, like or even financially, like What could I say to is that you can find opportunities where people see sacrifices somehow. Yeah. That's
seeing opportunities where others see sacrifices, I think, is a great summary. And a great kind of, I think, philosophy as well when you're talking about, let's say, the new age of the outdoor community and of the climbing community. It's really about what struggles are we currently facing on a global scale, but also how do you turn those struggles into opportunities for new creative initiatives and new creative ways of doing the things that we love as a community, and really being able to make sure that doing what we love today doesn't mean that someone tomorrow can't do that same thing.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I was worried. Like,
keeping you up at night.
Yeah, definitely. Like, at some point I was like, what's the point of doing all that if...
I've been there, I see. I understand, I understand. But just really quickly, or not really quickly, whatever, but just expanding a little bit on the concept of contradictions, like...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can't all be perfect. There's no way being the perfect climber who considers themselves part of the community, who also considers everything that their activity has in terms of impacts and making sure that they have the least impact possible. Like, there's just no way to be...
No, definitely.
A perfect climbing citizen, you know?
No one is... Yeah. No one can be.
So I think that, I mean, even I personally really feel sometimes the weight of contradictions, you know, saying like, okay, I'm an activist and I have these battles and I do this and this. But then sometimes I need to do things that aren't really aligned with those values, or aren't really activism, or like, you're going to be seen as a bad activist because you did this, this, and this. So I think contradictions are part of everyday life and everything. Yeah. But because this is your life and you have this, you're lucky that this is what you're doing every day. I'm imagining that you have a lot of these contradictions as well going on internally.
I would say, so the first year I became a pro climber, or I was only doing that. I was not thinking much, I was just going for it. But then this contradiction happened, and now I'm more and more into this thinking process where I'm I'm living in a world where people are dying from wars, from natural catastrophes and stuff like that, and my duty is to focus on climbing, and I'm like, what's the point where I go with that? I should focus on doing this move, and instead and then I see all this happening around me. I see this rise of the far right all around in Europe, and racism and homophobics and stuff so it feels quite everything
constricting.
Inside me. I've a lot of contradiction as a climber.
How do you go about your day feeling constricted? What do you do to help this feeling?
It's not always easy. I would say sometimes I feel good about it because I do this, but sometimes I have the feeling I can't do something anymore. So I would say by acting in different way, I can face this the thought. And
would you say that your projects are kind of a result of this kind of feeling that you have inside?
Yeah, definitely. I would say it's always step by step. I feel something, and then I probably act to face this and create maybe and think about the project that motivates me, and that works with the contradiction, or that maybe face a contradiction I have. Yeah. It is what happened with the traveling and the air traveling and flying and stuff.
And that's quite stimulating, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, that I found in activism, if we can call it that way, a good way to face contradiction.
I think we can call it that way.
Yeah. And that's the same now. I'm trying to, for example, these days I'm going a lot into demonstrations in France, these activism events that are organized by, for example, Les Soulèvements de la Terre in France and stuff like that. And that makes me feel way better. And but it's not really linked to the climbing, but still I find ways to...
Yeah. I mean, it's not linked to the climbing, but it's linked to you.
Yeah, definitely.
You are part of the climbing community and you are a climber. So it's that's what I was saying, that was very interesting before that, or is very interesting, is about how your values as a human impact what you do as a climber. And I think that having those contradictions and having those feelings and being I feel this and I want to do this, it's kind of independent whether it's, or it doesn't really matter if it's you as a human going in the middle of the street protesting for something, or if it's you deciding to approach a project in a specific way because they're guided by the same values. And I think that has a big downstream impact in terms of your community, because you actively choose to channel your values through your platform, and because it's a privilege to be where you are.
Definitely.
Able to use that privilege to bring forward your values that in this case are for environmental and social battles. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's quite also a contradiction where I have this responsibility and this platform where I can, and then I have the contradiction. I'm I go climbing and I'm I'm not doing enough activism or enough. So that can be tough as well. Past weeks, I've been thinking
juggling your time between
or being feeling quite bad because I was not using this enough. But I also have contradiction with social media and stuff, like not wanting to use social media that much, and then like.
But you need to use it to be able to talk about the things that you want to talk about.
Yeah, that's something.
I think this is a condition of life where you're like, I want something, but I also want that thing, but I don't want to. So finding a balance is always
tricky. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But I feel like your pink tights give you enough balance, so.
Maybe.
I'm sure you'll figure it out.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
But yeah, well, thank you for sharing all of that. I think that's really helpful, and also for the people who are listening to us. Wherever they're listening to us, I think that hearing that these kind of contradictions are happening in everyone is really helpful. And also the idea that who you are as a human and what values you have doesn't need to be the complete opposite in terms of your climbing. Like, you can really marry the two things together. And I think that what you're carrying forward is a really good example of that. And I can't wait to see what comes next.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you for this interesting talk.
I just really want to show Seb's piece of paper because I think it's just so pretty, you know? Like, you have everything. You have the scribbles, you have the coffee stain, you have the crinkly paper.
Yeah.
I think it's...
Thank you.
It's a nice object.
It's a nice object.
It's a nice object. Okay, well, thank you very much for sitting on this couch with us today. And we'll see you next time.
Yep.
Ciao.
See you. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for listening. If you like our podcast, feel free to subscribe, share an episode with your friends and family, and leave a comment below.